Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Tom and Heather Staff, that are founders of streets.co.uk. It's great to have you join us today, guys. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to do this.
Cheers, and thanks for having us.
No worries at all. It's a pleasure. Could you give us a bit of insight into street.co.uk and where you fit into the world of tech?
Yeah, so the actual company is called Street Group. So we've actually got two products. We've got Spectre and street.co.uk. And yeah, I mean, we are prop tech, and our family background is pretty heavily focused in estate agents. So our mum and dad were both estate agents. So we're siblings. And our auntie and uncle were also estate agents. So I think for us, that's been really, really helpful, because estate agency is quite a niche industry once you get into it. And knowing exactly what estate agents do on a day-to-day basis is extremely useful. And there are quite a lot of prop tech companies that kind of operate in the industry who probably don't have a deeper understanding of what estate agents actually do. So yeah, I think our family background has been quite instrumental.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you say you've grown up in the industry. Did you immediately go into this kind of area? And when did you start your own business?
Yeah, I suppose I'll answer this one. So I definitely haven't always been in this industry. Whilst we grew up with it, I went down a different path and worked for one of the big four accounting firms for 10 years as a consultant. Whereas Tom's taken a much more entrepreneurial route his life that has definitely focused around the property industry. So it was 5 years ago, was it, Tom, now? Just over 5 years ago, when Tom had the idea to create Spectre, which was our first product for the industry. And very early on, I thought it was absolutely fantastic what Tom had created. So decided to make the leap from accounting into prop tech, which isn't a conventional route, I would say, into this industry, but nonetheless, I think it served me well in terms of the experience that I've got from different parts of my life.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the software Spectre there. Could you give us a bit of insight into what that is?
Yeah, sure. So Spectre's quite niche. So without knowing the industry, it's sometimes quite difficult to explain. But believe it or not, most vendors, and when I say vendors, I mean sellers, so most people selling their home, there's actually a really high percentage, I think it's over 50% of people, will actually change estate agent before they manage to successfully sell.
Right, okay.
Which, from an outsider's perspective, sometimes people are like, you know, what? That many people change estate agents? But there's a lot of reasons for that. But it is very common, you know, it's because some agents can do things like overvalue houses, they can, particularly some very cheap ones, can, you know, offer the world and potentially underdeliver. So it's really important for, you know, what we're buyers, because there are clients, but for the better estate agents to keep in contact with these people when they are on the market. So the software that we initially created with Spectre was basically just automating what was a very manual process for estate agents. So Spectre fundamentally at its core is a marketing tool for estate agents to help them reach the right people at the right time, basically.
Amazing. That sounds great. I mean, so in terms of your business, what do you do differently to other estate agents at Street Group? What do you do differently? What's your, say, mission statement?
So I think firstly, it's important to say we aren't ourselves an estate agent. It's something we get confused with all the time. So our clients are estate agents, but we're a prop tech company, so a technology company that serves estate agents. So I think what we did differently to other prop tech companies, particularly when we first started, was we placed a huge emphasis on customer satisfaction, customer service. We were one of the first prop tech companies to really pioneer customer success. And all of our decisions are driven by, will this increase our clients' return on investment? So estate agents aren't traditionally served brilliantly by their suppliers. There are some that are brilliant, but there are also a lot that estate agents aren't particularly happy with. Won't go into details because it will cause controversy, but And so we tried to be the opposite of that. We tried to make sure that everything we did was in our clients' best interests. And that served us really well. And I think we developed quite early on quite a good reputation for that within the industry. So we've tried to maintain that all the way through. And especially when launching new products like street.co.uk, it makes it a lot easier when you're coming at it with a good reputation.
Yeah, great. So you have more than one product, don't you? You have Spectre, and then what's the other products that you have as well?
So street.co.uk has been 3 years in the making. So street.co.uk is essentially a CRM for estate agents. As Tom touched upon before, the industry hasn't been very well served by technology, which anybody that's listening who has been through the process of buying or selling or renting was probably familiar with the fact that there's not a lot of tech available to help you with that process. But there's also not a lot of tech available to estate agents to help people with that process. You know, you're still relying on phone calls and emails, basically, with your estate agent. And I don't know if you've been through this process recently, Ben, but it's the same as it was almost 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So really early on, me and Tom, having the sort of deep knowledge of this industry that we both have, really wanted to tackle this problem of why have estate agents got access to such poor technology, and why can't they offer their clients technology to help with this process of moving or renting. But there's a reason why people haven't done it before, and it's because it's not the most attractive industry to get into from a tech point of view. You know, it's very highly fragmented. You've got lots and lots of small, independent, one-branch estate agents, so it's not an easy market to crack. It's also, despite what a lot of people think, it's quite... it's more intricate than I think a lot of people think. You know, there's more complexity to being an estate agent, I think, than a lot of people realise. Obviously, there's lots of legal stuff that you have to abide by and all that sort of stuff. So building a custom CRM is required. You know, you can't, as an estate agent, just pick up Salesforce and think, right, okay, here we go. So you do have to build custom-built technology that's very detailed. I mean, it's 3 years and what, Tom, seven figures of investment now that, you know, has gone into this.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and in order to do that, the only real way that we could do that was to have the foundation of having Spectre that allowed us the freedom to build another product, but also the relationships with over 2,000 agents already via our current product. And like Tom said, building that reputation that has allowed us to then enter this phenomenally complex market, but that's one that is desperately required by this industry and by consumers.
Yeah, definitely. It strikes me that it's quite a slow moving industry in terms of technology. It's almost like insurance and things like that. It's just a little bit behind the technology that is required these days. Do you think that, you know, we're on a tipping point now where this is going to be, you know, we're going to see a big change in this kind of area with technology?
Yeah, definitely. I think prop tech is a really, really interesting and exciting industry right now, because estate agencies kind of going through this technological revolution that other industries went through 10, 15 years ago. And there's a lot of reasons why it hasn't happened in estate agency. As Heather mentioned earlier, it's a really highly hyper-local and fragmented industry. So in most industries, you'll tend to have three or four big names that will take the top 40 to 50% of the market, whereas estate agency is the complete opposite. So I think it's over 50% of the entire market is one or two branch independents. So those smaller companies cannot themselves build the technology that's required. And I think one of the big other reasons is that estate agency, a lot of the money that went into the industry, particularly from VC and private equity, was along the lines of, what does an estate agent actually do? They're going to go the way of travel agents. This will all move online. And so a lot of the money was funneled at the online agents. And that's where the investment went, because that's where people who weren't intimately familiar with the industry thought the industry was going to go. Now, over the kind of past 5 years, it's become clear that actually the online agents aren't going to take over estate agency. Their kind of market share's kind of topped out at about 4%. The industry's missed out on 4 or 5 years of innovation, because all that innovation went to the online agents. Nobody was focusing that money and attention on, can we build the technology and tools for, in quotes, traditional estate agents. And so combination of those two things means the industry is just miles behind from a technology point of view. And that's really the problem we're trying to crack.
Amazing. Just out of curiosity, I mean, it's a mammoth task you've embarked upon and to build this product, because there's so many different moving parts. And like you were mentioning before with estate agents, they're all kind of individual. So how did you kind of make the product universal for so many different individual businesses?
It's one of the biggest challenges we have because the industry is so fragmented and hyper-local. You've got all these businesses and they tend to all do things slightly differently. And so we have to tread a very fine line. So firstly, we try and make the software as customizable as we can. But we have a rule basically that we won't build anything within our software that is just for one client. So if it gets built, it gets built for everybody. If we're not building it for everybody, it doesn't get built. And then the flip side of that is there are points, especially within street.co.uk, where we have had to say, okay, after conducting our own research, we believe this is the best practice for this particular process, and therefore we'll add as much flexibility in as possible. But we have to tread that line between putting our foot down and saying, no, this is the way that the software does it, and adding the functionality in so that people can do it in different ways. So in different parts of the system, we've chosen different options.
We've been quite fortunate in the timing of this, because I think a lot of agents out there now desperately want this technology. They know what they want to have access to, and they just can't. So it's been a bit of luck on our part, I think, that we have released this product just at the right time when agents are so desperate to it and willing to compromise on things that, I wouldn't say compromise, but almost conform in certain areas that, I want this, and therefore I'm happy to be led on this particular thing. But like Tom says, we have made it extremely customizable versus current options anyway.
Yeah. So I was just thinking it does massively give you an advantage having grown up in the industry, because there's so much to know about this industry that if you were just into tech, you definitely wouldn't have such a deep understanding like you guys do.
No, I think it's fair to say, Tom, it would have been impossible if we hadn't had the industry knowledge before. But also, our dad is still operating as an estate agent, so we have a resource there. I'm sure he'll be love being called a resource that we can just tap into. We often sit in his estate agency and work there, because I think it's really important that you just keep your finger on the pulse, you know what's going on. And it's very difficult to do that unless you can be on the ground and see it and hear it and experience it.
Definitely.
I think it's worth mentioning as well that whilst Heather was down in London doing the High Flyer consultancy side of things, I was, whilst I was setting up my own businesses and doing that kind of thing, I did spend a long time working with my dad in his agency. So I've been on the ground doing the job. And to be honest, that's actually where the first version of Spectre came from. So Spectre is an automation. The first version of Spectre was an automation of a job that I was doing manually.
Right, okay.
So it was half born out of laziness, but automating a job that I was meant to be doing manually.
Yeah, but that seems to be where all the best ideas in technology come from. It's just someone having, an issue themselves personally and going, how can I make this easier for me? And then in turn, that in your circumstance, it can help a whole industry. So that's really interesting how that's come around. So these days, it's expected that new businesses, they require a lot of funding to get off the ground. And do you guys haven't had any funding at all, have you?
No, we haven't.
How have you worked that? How have you managed to build such a successful business with no funding at all?
So I think we're very lucky because we've got a software as a service business where with Spectre, which was our first product, our clients pay monthly in advance. So, compared to a traditional working capital cycle of a normal business where you have to buy your goods up front, sell them and then potentially get paid 90 days later, we were able to fund our growth through the cash that we were getting for the subscriptions from Spectre. And I also think that me and Tom were very, because it's just us two and because we've bootstrapped it, I think you tend to be more cautious with what you spend your money on, So we were very careful to sort of build it within our means as we grew. So I remember when we were in the very early days, we knew somebody who'd got funding at exactly the time we sort of started our business. And they had, you know, some swanky offices on Deansgate, whereas we were in a basement in Ancoats. And I think making, you have to make those tougher financial decisions because you don't have the funding. But I actually think overall that's been a definite pro. Would you agree, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's allowed us to do things that if we'd been funded, we wouldn't have been able to do. I mean, I think a great example of that is Street. I think if we'd have gone, if we'd have had investors and we'd have gone to them and said, so we've got this idea, it's an extremely large project that's very fuzzy in scope. It will probably take 3 years to build. Will be no revenue, pure cost for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Are you up for it? I imagine they would have turned around and said, no, please focus on your core product and make it more profitable. So I do think we get to do stuff that we wouldn't be able to do if we were funded. And I think because we know the industry so well, we know what should and shouldn't work, and we don't have to go and justify that to somebody else. If we see an opportunity and we think it's going to benefit our clients, we can just do it. Whereas I imagine most people with investors have to justify decisions like that. And knowing what other people know about the industry and don't know about the industry, I imagine justifying some of our decisions would be quite difficult.
So, you know, in terms of like hiring and onboarding staff, I mean, how much of a business's success would you say is down to that?
I think onboarding less so. I think in onboarding, as we've grown, especially on the technical side, onboarding is incredibly important. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned earlier how important industry knowledge is. We've actually found that on the commercial side of the business, we tend to hire people who are ex-estate agents and then train them in what we need, so customer success or sales, rather than the other way around. On the technical side, onboarding, yes, is important. It allows you to get that person up to speed a lot quicker. But I think it's nowhere near as important as finding the right people in the first place. And I think that's a lesson we've learned the hard way in some respects. I think early doors, we made some less than ideal hires. And I think you have to go through the pain of doing that to learn those lessons.
Yeah, I think we were really fortunate with our first handful of hires. We hired amazing people who are still with us to this day. And then, we perhaps didn't apply the rigor that we should have done on our recruitment process. Thus ended up, as Tom said, with some potentially not as good decisions that you then have to unwind and undo. But yeah, hiring the right people, I'd say, is enormously important.
So I'm kind of intrigued into how you keep... Once you find the perfect, you know, employee or someone to work in your business, how do you keep them? How do you keep them satisfied and motivated to remain within your business for such a long period of time?
I think that's it's a huge question, and there's so much we've done over the years to make sure that we try our best to make it an environment that people, you know, stay and want to stay and enjoy and have fun. And I think a lot of that comes down to, firstly, we give everybody share options, so everybody in the business hopefully feels like an owner of the business, and we give them a lot of autonomy with that as well, which I think the right people with autonomy is just the perfect mix. We also have a very, very, I think, a very good culture. We have radical transparency where, you know, we do default to open, to steal a Google phrase. So me and Tom, any questions, we will answer them openly and honestly. We share the figures, we share everything, even down to... Every week we have an all hands with the business where people can submit anonymous questions and me and Tom will answer them there and then on the spot. And I think that's worked very well over the years. So there's all the usual stuff, you know, like benefits and volunteer days and birthdays off. And we do a 1 year tax-free holiday on the anniversary of your joining the firm. So some enforced R&R. So we have all that stuff, but I think the more important thing is the general culture that we have. Would you agree, Tom?
Yeah, I think the benefits and everything are great, and we do like to do stuff like that. And the £1,000 tax-free holiday is a good example. But I think the culture is more important. I think the idea of the kind of transparency element does make it feel much more of a team dynamic than an employer-employee dynamic. Because everybody knows everything that's going on in the business. If we're making decisions, they know about that thought process as and when it's happening. So everyone gets an opportunity to pitch in with their opinion. So everything is very collaborative. And I think, I mean, as a company, we have very low employee turnover. We're very few people leave over the course of the business. And I think that's a big reason for it.
It's really interesting because I think nowadays, I don't know whether you've noticed this shift in wider employment, but there seems to be definitely less of a kind of noticeable hierarchy in terms of structure of a business.
Yeah, I think there's a subtle difference between kind of hierarchy and power dynamic there. I think hierarchy is necessary as you grow. There needs to be layers, and we try to stay as flat of a structure as possible for as long as possible. But you do get to a point where that just starts to break down. But I think the key difference is it's not when you do introduce a hierarchy, it's more, you know, managers are there to kind of enable the team rather than oversee the team. And again, that kind of, we've tried to keep that collaborative culture even as we've grown. And I think that comes back down to some of the bad hires we were talking about earlier. When you get somebody who doesn't fit in with that kind of open culture, that's when things can start to go wrong.
So would you say when you're looking for people to hire, would you look for more of a cultural fit rather than a technical fit? And you, is that the way you'd do it?
Yes. Now, I think that's one of the mistakes we've made. Funnily enough, this actually, so I used to have a mentor who was he was director of engineering at Zendesk, an absolutely brilliant mentor. And he, right at the beginning, said to me, there are some lessons that it doesn't matter how many times people tell you, you have to learn it by making the mistake. And the example he was talking about was hiring from the CV, basically. So hiring for technical experience, even when you don't believe it's a good culture fit, you think this CV is, you know, so perfect. They've got the entire tech stack, great experience. And I have to agree with him in retrospect, that is a mistake you have to make in person, because we did that. Whereas now, yes, of course we look for the technical fit, but the cultural fit is a prerequisite. If that's not there, it doesn't matter how good you are from a technical perspective.
Yeah, and just to add to that, there's a book called Principles by Ray Dalio, which is a really good book. And he says in there that they recruit at Bridgewater using values first, then skills, and then experience in that order. And I would definitely, yeah, and it's a really good paragraph. It might not be those exact words, but it's that gist. And we've definitely found that. And I think during times like coronavirus as well, it really hits home how important it has been to have the right people where you fully trust them, whatever the circumstances, whether you're remote in the office, to do a really good job and care about what they're doing. And I don't think you'd get that if you were just recruiting just for the skills.
How do you know that they're right for the business? Is it some kind of, I don't know, personality traits, or what do you look for?
I think it's really difficult in just one interview, but actually I think what's helped us now is a much more thorough and a much longer interview process. And you can look for cues right from the start, you know, the first time they interact with somebody from your business, right through to, you know, various technical tests they might do, through to the first interview, through to how they communicate in between, you know, through to right to the end. And I think it's trying to pick up on everything from the moment they first interact with your business through to the end, and pick up on some of the subtle cues. And I mean, Tom, you always ask certain questions during your interviews, don't you? Like, is there anything you're particularly looking to avoid in your next role? And sometimes when you ask the more, you know, converse of what they're expecting, not what you're looking to get in your next role, but what are you looking to avoid, it draws out some of that and some of those things.
That question has definitely elicited some really revealing responses that have led to no hire decisions. Yeah. I mean, to pick a recent example, I asked, is there anything you are specifically looking to avoid in your next position? And they said, my last company pivoted twice. I was there for 3 years. They pivoted twice. And I just didn't like, you know, it was too much of a change. It was, you know, that trying to pivot so quickly. And that to me was a massive red flag, because we are a very fast moving company that reacts quite quickly. And, you know, the idea that they were changing direction was really off putting to this candidate. And I thought that is a bad cultural fit for our company. Might be great in a bigger company, but in a small, nimble, or hopefully we're trying to stay nimble startup, that is definitely something we are, is pivoting constantly, even on small projects. So asking that question, I always find, is really useful.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So I'm just thinking about the industry as a whole. I mean, what do people tend to underestimate about it?
So I think people in general underestimate the role that a good estate agent can play in getting you the value. If we're talking about selling a home here, the value that a good estate agent can get you is actually, well, they say 5% in the industry, 5 to 7% is the difference a good estate agent can make. And if you think about the fact that most people are selling usually their biggest tax-free asset, you know, 5 to 7% increment on that is actually an enormous number. But I think part of the problem is that the general public do not know generally what estate agents do for their fee. And they've got a terrible reputation in this country. And sometimes, you know, quite rightly so, you hear some of the horror stories. Whereas the good ones that do a good job, you just don't hear about. And I've recently moved house, so I've just been through this process myself. And because I'm in the industry, I got 10 valuations, which I know is completely immoral. But I did. It was all market research. And the difference in valuations was phenomenal. But to the point where 2 estate agents out of the 10 massively actually undervalued my property relative to what I actually sold it for. And stuff like that, I think, you know, if you were just, you know, Joe Public and you just happened to randomly pick those 2 estate agents and none others, you could have, you know, lost out on a significant material proportion on the value of your home. You'd hope that some competitive bidding would get it up a bit, but not to the extent that you would want. So a good estate agent to me is extremely important. And actually some of the best work that they do is, yes, negotiating the best price, but then making sure that the sale completes. And a lot of 40% of all transactions don't, they fall through. And a lot of that is down to poor sales progression, as it's known in the industry. And a good estate agent will, I mean, mine was phenomenal. They will make sure that stuff gets done. They make sure that the process doesn't get stuck. They make sure that both sides are communicating to make sure that sale goes through, particularly if there's a big chain. And my, one of the things that we're hoping to change is that perception of, or knowledge of what an estate agent does. Because I think if people had access to technology that showed them what their estate agent was doing in the background, it would help that problem.
Absolutely. I think just to wrap up the interview today, how have you continued to thrive in such a difficult, you know, time we're living in right now? You know, everyone's working remotely, everyone's having to adapt day by day. How have you managed to not just kind of succeed, but to thrive?
So I think the key for us, I mean, obviously the whole pandemic situation is far from ideal. And it was extremely stressful for the first month or two. But for us, I think the key was to kind of fall back on our core principles of being transparent about everything. So when you're having meetings every Friday, you're talking about the sales numbers going up, that's very easy to be transparent. Where it's not that easy is when everybody's on lockdown, it's the first month of coronavirus, you know, we doubled down on our transparency and communication. And so we actually dedicated an hour a day to writing a written communication every single day to the entire team to explain exactly what was happening, the financial impact it was having on the company, you know, our plans to deal with it. We did the same with our clients. We were in constant communication with our clients. One of the key things that we did was we proactively applied a 60% discount to every single invoice that went out. And I think that communication for us was absolutely key. So the whole team were aligned, even though we were obviously having to adapt to working remotely. And we were able to, you know, to right the ship very quickly and then get back into the growth. And obviously hiring was a big part of that for us. So we've added, I think, 15 developers in quite quick succession. Wow. Over lockdown.
Wow. Amazing. So what's the future of the business? Where can you see this going now?
I think we're at a really exciting point where 3 years in, Street is finally ready. We've got a number of agents using the system already. That, because it's a system for estate agents, it's also a system for their clients. So there's consumers using Street as well at the moment, which is great, because we're getting great feedback from agents, but also great feedback from the public saying this is making moving house easier, which is just obviously from our perspective brilliant to hear. So we're formally launching Streets to the industry on the 24th of November, and we've got hundreds and hundreds of agents registered for the launch event. And we'll hopefully, over the next few years, make Street a household name. And, you know, hopefully, if you're moving house, you wouldn't consider doing so without using an agent that was powered by Street. That's where we're aiming to get to.
Excellent. That sounds really, really exciting. I'm sure it'll be a great success. Yeah, I think that might wrap us up today. I mean, thanks so much for coming on the show and spending, you know, an hour doing this today. I'm sure you're both very busy people, so we do appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Cheers. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.